Elizabeth Joyce, and you're listening to Let's Find Out. And that was William Vitale singing that beautiful song, Open My Heart to the World. Tonight I have a wonderful guest. His name is Robin Miller, and he has quite a story to tell. Robin is a shaman, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about him. He's a recently retired business owner who went on a Native American Lakota-style vision quest in 2001. During that experience, he was called on by the spirits to be the medium through which the book, Songs of the Shaman, Path of the Feather, could be written. This book is an in-depth review of the differing perspectives between Native Aboriginal cultures and what has become the dominant culture. On a personal level, Robin's cultural interests in Native America date back to 1954, when he visited the Black Hills of South Dakota and have had a vision up on Harnany Peak. Unbeknownst to him at the time was the fact that black elk, the famous Olaga Sioux medicine man, had his now famous vision in the same place, which was documented in John Nearhart's 1930 book, Black Elk Speaks. In the present, Mr. Miller is a facilitator of the Healing Earth Native Art Flute Circle. He's listed with the INAFA, International Native American Flute Association, as an instructor for the flute, and he also makes, tunes, and repairs flutes. The Flute Circle meets every Thursday night, 6 to 8 p.m., at the Mitchell Museum of the American Indian in Evanston, Illinois. He is also a veteran sun dancer and fire keeper. That, to me, is thrilling. So I'd like to welcome Robin Miller. Good evening, Robin. It's nice to hear you.
How is everyone this evening?
Tell us a little bit about the fire keeper and sun dance part. I love that part.
Well, I guess the best explanation is to say that a vision quest is an individual event where you go out on your own and pray for yourself. Sundance is where you pray for everyone else. And Sundance begins with the sacred fire. And, of course, the firekeepers are the ones who begin that entire ceremony with the opening prayers before the fire has started. So it's a very honored position to be a firekeeper at Sundance.
Yes, I understand that. I really do. I work with a lady named Amarita Nandamayi, and she prays for everyone else. And before that, they do the ritual of fire, which is called RT, and it's an honor to hold the fire tray for her, and then she begins her healing work. So tell us more about your quest and what it was and over what period of time. Where did you go, with who, and what happened?
Well, that covers a lot of ground. A vision quest, Lakota style, is a four-day event. You go for 4 days and four nights into the wilderness to pray. And literally speaking, you take no food, no water, and what else you might bring with you depends upon the local customs. Lakota, typically, you don't take anything other than your prayer pipe and the clothes that you're wearing. So you go off into the wilderness, and the idea is to find a friendly tree and pray with that tree until that tree is willing to speak to you and reveal its secrets.
Oh, my goodness. I have to tell you a story, Robin. My grandmother was born in Maine, and she was a shaman. And when we were little, the way she punished us was to give us a sit-upon, which was a little mat, and we had to go and find a pine tree, and we had to lean against the pine tree, and we weren't allowed to come back in until we could tell her what we had done wrong and why she was angry. And I did that at 3 years old.
This, of course, is a little less of a punishing type of thing. The idea is to make contact with that tree, to make contact with nature. And in our case, I spent an entire day facing the tree with my palms on the bark and just praying and praying, trying to get the tree to speak with me. And that entire first day, I got nowhere. But
I didn't mean for it as a punishment. I meant for it as a listening discipline and awareness. She developed awareness with us.
Exactly. And that's what happens when you pray with a tree like that, too.
And they do speak to you.
Eventually they will.
They
if your
do.
Heart's in the right place.
I think that what happens is the chemistry in the body has to get to a place of acceptance that this could really happen. And then and it can take 4 days or it could take 3 days or 2 days. Who knows? Each person would be different. But that's exciting that you did that.
Well, let's remember, too, that we are brothers with the trees. We breathe what they exhale. And
absolutely.
They breathe what we exhale. It's a trade-off.
So what is a moonlight awakening?
Moonlight awakening was something I experienced while I was out there. I was in a very heavily over-covered forest, so when you looked up at night, you could not see the sky at all. It was just totally covered with trees and heavy brush, and it was they were fully grown and very tall, and No sunlight, no stars, no nothing. And at one point in the middle of the night, I was awakened by moonlight shining in my face. And I can't tell you what an experience that was, because I wasn't aware of what was going on. All I was aware of was this extremely bright light shining directly in my face. And it woke me up with a start.
Mm-hmm. And that's how spirit comes.
And it was the... it was the only place that the moon came through the trees anywhere around that I could see. Hmm. So it was really kind of a startling thing. And that was one of the places and one of the ways that spirit came through and let me know that that things were going to begin to happen. And they did.
And you got the name Red Moon Ombre. Can you tell us how that happened?
The spirit... entity that I was in contact with had a Lakota name which is not pronounceable in our language.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a spirit world name, and it doesn't have letters, and so that you can't pronounce it like that. So I asked him what I could call him, and literally speaking, there's a picture on the front of the book that was written that has a picture, and that he said, here's the picture, you make up a name and you can call me that. So in the picture there's a moon, it's Red Rock Country. Mm-hmm. And the spirit presented himself as a male. So hmm. Red Moon Ombre.
That's really neat. And so the picture came, so that was through the thought field, and you saw the picture. And then after that, I imagine that you started receiving a lot of telepathy messages.
Not having very much experience with this, it's kind of difficult for me to describe exactly what it was. Again, in the spirit world, they don't have language like we do here, and they don't have words, they don't have pictures, they don't have sight and vision and the five senses like we do, so it's difficult to interpret that in terms of five senses. I came to call it a thought field.
It is a thought field. It is
exactly.
A thought field. It's called the field, or that's what Deepak Chopra calls it, but it's actually a place of energetic transference, and it can happen instantly, and they can put a thought in your mind and body, and you can put a thought in their mind and body as well.
The interesting part about the thought field for me was that once you basically penetrate and get inside that thought field, you can literally go anywhere and learn anything.
In any universe, you certainly
in
can.
In any universe, yeah, there's no limitation.
You know, Rob and I've been in that thought field since I was little. And when I was growing up, they didn't have all of these video games and television and all of that kind of thing. And I used to lay down on the bed and close my eyes. And I put myself in kind of a box. I called it the subway. And I would lay down and I could think and go anywhere. And I could go to London and tell you what the weather was, what was going on. I could go to Paris. My favorite place to go when I was little was the Amazon jungle.
I love it.
So it's interesting what you're saying.
Machu
Well, that's I know I was down the Amazon jungle down near
Oh,
Brazil
okay.
and Argentina. The book is proportionally about cultural differences between today's culture and the North American culture, North American Indian. Can you give us some examples of what that means?
Well, there's quite a few things that are attached to the. To what I see as native culture and the way they are connected with nature. They see themselves as part of nature, whereas Western society more or less has come up with this idea of dominion over the world and the earth and the animals. Whereas the native saw themselves as part of it, not being in charge, you see. And there's a huge difference when you look at the comparison between the two. Trees are called the standing people, for example. Stones are called the grandfather stones. The four-legged animals are called the four-legged people, and things like that. So they see all of these other entities, whether it's animate or inanimate, they see them as people. They're just people having a different life experience.
Wouldn't you see them as more of a life form and that people would have the mind that can speak? We're the only animal on the planet that can speak and share with the voice because the others don't seem to do that.
Well, spirit is actually in everything, whether it's animate or inanimate. And being
Absolutely.
that way, the difference between the things that we call inanimate and animate is what I call rate of participation.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
A squirrel's life might be, a few years. A cat's or a dog's might be, 10, 12, 15 years. What's the period of life for a stone? What's the period of life for a tree? What's the period of life?
Eons.
Yeah, eons. And, just because, I mean, that's their entire lifespan, whether we call it, 90 years for a human being or 10,000 years for a stone, that's their lifespan. So it's the difference is rate of participation.
Right, and that does bring a level of respect to all life forms.
Yes.
And tell us more about what you learned in those 4 days.
Well, it was more about the idea of how we look at things in terms of resource extraction in today's world, and that somehow we can go in and cut down an entire forest so that we can harvest the trees and the lumber for our use to build homes and whatever else. And yet, we don't see that by cutting down that forest, we're cutting down the life songs and the living things that are part of that cooperative forest. It's not just the trees. It's the plants and the animals and the foxes and the birds and
It
the
affects
worms.
everything.
Everything that lives in that ecosystem is
Right.
gone when you cut down the trees.
And you know what's so sad? I have a house in Pennsylvania in Bucks County, and they have built and built and built. And now you see these deer, of course, running down the highway or running across your backyard because they have been displaced. Their home has been displaced. And that's really sad to me.
Yes, it's rumored that, of course, at one time when the Europeans first arrived in this country, that a squirrel could have crossed from the Atlantic Ocean all the way to the Mississippi River and never touched the ground because it
Oh, my
was all
goodness.
trees. Nowadays, of course, that would be quite impossible. But it's rumored that it was true back then. So, we've done a lot to change what this entire continent looks like.
We've done a lot to change the naturalness. I have somebody by the name of William Vitalis who opened our hearts to the world, and he's got a message to us about water. So let's listen to that for a minute, and it might chime into what we're talking about.
Yes.
Water, it's known by many names. Muslims call it Jal. The Hindu call it Pani. The Christian call it water. But to the cloud, it's all the same. In all the world, nothing soothes the pain like water. Dear sister, water, so humble and pure. I would cry too if I was a cloud. I would cry long and I would cry loud if I could wash away. Same cup, it's known by many names, but to our hearts it's all the same. Oh, I can call it water, but I can also call it body. Oh,
it just talks about oneness. It talks about the need for world peace, and it talks about accepting everything. And although I'm using it for people, I like it for the rocks and the trees and the grass and the birds and the bees as well.
It does. It's a very pretty song. I like that. And I would have to add to that too. You know, water is one of the triad of things that we need for life. We need air. We need water. And we need the soil from which we grow our food. Mm-hmm. That's the native idea of the Trinity, as opposed to the Christian idea of the Trinity.
Right. Well, that's the Mother Earth Trinity, I would think.
Yes.
This book is really important to me because I think that if somebody, an adult, would read this book and what you've been through, they could begin to understand the way that we're supposed to live. When I grew up, I was read the works of Thornton W. Burgess. Do you know him?
I am aware, yes.
He wrote the Mother West Wind books, and he wrote in 1911, 1912, and they're wonderful books, and they're still available today. He was also a maniac. He grew up in Maine. But I want to get back to about the words in the book and about how it creates a thought in a reader's mind and how you process inside of yourself when you read a book like this. So what are you getting at? Is that the point of writing the book?
What came to me in this was, and I wrote about this in the introduction so that people would know when they went into the book exactly how to approach it. The idea with most readers is they go into the book, you know, very difficult trying to find out what it is that the author is trying to tell them. Well, I'm not trying to tell you anything. The words are there. They were brought to me by Spirit and put in place by Spirit, and they're done in such a way that the idea is to create thoughts and ideas and perceptions in your mind, and those are the ideas, those are the words you're supposed to follow, not what I wrote on the page.
Well, that's fascinating.
Those will take you to the knowledge, the things that you should gain from the book. I can't tell you what to gain from the book. Mm-hmm.
I call that processing. When you read a book and you actually begin to process and have your mind expand and have your heart open and bring new thoughts and new awareness into yourself, then you're truly aligning yourself with Spirit and God. And if you can write a book that affects people that way, that has deep meaning, very deep meaning.
I hope so. I know that, you know, you have that personal pride thing that sometimes comes into you when something like this occurs. And I remember the spirit world telling me, you know, that the book itself was 7 levels deep, so that it would take many readings to get the full meaning. And of course, as the author, I'm thinking, all right, hey, I'm pretty good, you know. And then the spirit world says, well, Rob, you're about a level 3 guy, so.
Well, they're talking about the dimensions, of which I've written 2 books called Ascension, Accessing the Fifth Dimension, and the workbook on how to do it. So mm-hmm. I'm really in sync with what you've written. And there are 7 levels to each movement. There's 7 dimensions. There's 7 areas in each dimension, and there's 7 levels in each area. So I'm sure that's what they were talking about. But I'd like to – what is this Spirits of the Seventh Four? What is that? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The spirit of the seventh fire is a very simple concept, and that is that what we do today will affect our offspring for the next 7 generations. And what's happening to us today came from 7 generations back. Native Americans have a saying that says, you know, we do not own this world. We have only borrowed it from our children. So what is it like, this place we leave for them to lay their blankets to rest?
Wow. So we are creating our future lives and our future knowledge and ancestry heritage while we live our life.
Yes, we're creating what's going to be here for our children and our children's children and like that. And sometimes when you look around, you don't particularly like what I see in a lot of cases.
Well, what do you feel about if a mother and son or a father and daughter are angry and they separate and one tries to reconcile it in this lifetime and can't do it? Do you think that comes from 7 generations back?
That would be difficult to say. I'm not sure how something like that would work. I think that a lot of the things that haunt us in terms of karma sometimes can come from back there. That might be something that was going on in a previous incarnation that caused that. I mean, you know, everything has a spirit life in it, and that spirit life has a memory. And as the atoms that you know, that we consume when we eat, sleep, and breathe and drink, those atoms have a memory that come with them, and there's a karma that's built in with those things.
Yes, it's chemical.
It's chemical.
Greg Braden, I think that's what Greg Braden is calling the new, I'm trying to think, they're quantum. It's very quantum, very, yes. We don't understand it all yet. It's new knowledge. So as you have come into this way and mind, and you started this in 2000, how has that changed your life? And are you practicing the belief system that you received for the book in your own life?
Well, I certainly try. It's a total change from the way that I was brought up as a child and the things that I was taught to believe in back then, some of which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me and were kind of troubling. But now, I know Native ways are difficult. But
what was troubling to you? Please tell me.
About what I was taught.
The difference between what you were taught in the past and what you taught now. You said some of it was troubling. I'd love to know what that was.
Well, one of the stories that they talk about that have to do with life and death and the purpose behind things just seems so focused on this whole man has dominion thing, which seems troubling to me because I don't think we really have that. I think we're just part of the greater scheme. We're part of that of the greater biosphere, the greater ecosystem that we call planet Earth. I mean, you know, let's face it, we have a very thin membrane that sits on top of the Earth that we live in. It's only about 5 miles thick. It's our air, our water, and our soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the size of the rest of the cosmos, and you start to say, hey.
Yes, we are very tiny. We are like specks in the universe. However, we have been given something important, I believe. We've been given the mind. And the mind has been given reason. Therefore, we can leave things behind through writing and art, and we can create, and we have great potential that most of us have not discovered yet. And I think this is what's coming. I think this is the hope of 2012. We happen to be in that famous month in December, and we are about to come into 2021-12. And I believe that a brand new energy is coming in that's going to expand our awareness and make us more healthy, more loving, and more embracing the world, embracing the other parts that we have refused to accept, acknowledge, or love. So we're going into a greater love. And I certainly hope that that's true for all of us because we need world peace.
Well, this is exactly what the Hopi prophecies talked about, moving into the fourth world. And
right.
This is that time.
Yes.
And I think they held out great hope that it was going to be something that would bring out some of the characteristics in our species that would make us more loving and make us more accepting and make us change things so that it's a good world for everyone instead of just being, you know, for those who have a lot of money and are rich and wealthy.
Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, sometimes we have to have destruction before reconstruction. I had the honor of sitting with Grandfather Hopi in Arizona during the harmonic conversions in 1987, right? And it was very exciting, and they passed the peace pipe around, and he taught lessons and taught classes, and it was wonderful. I got to wear the headdress. The reason that I got to wear the headdress as a female was because I'm an identical twin, and they worshipped twins. They thought that they were special people. I wonder what they would do with triplets, huh?
Yeah.
Well, so the seekers of this knowledge are guided to this work, and they're going to be learning from your book and processing, as they said. So you've had some very strong associations with a variety of Native people for quite a few years. And how has the book been received by the Native community? And what would you describe about readers from other cultures?
Well, first I would have to say that it's important to know that I didn't just write the book and then, you know, publish the thing and, oh, well, let's see what's going to happen. I actually sent it out to a number of friends of mine from the Native community, one of whom was a medicine man and another one was a holy man. And the idea behind that was to let them review the book and see if there was anything in there that they felt was going to be particularly offensive to our red brothers. And they came back with certain suggestions and ideas. So the book has been previously previewed. And I received help with editing in that.
That would be in editing, a good editing.
Yes.
From people that count.
As a whole, as you can probably guess, with almost any cultural group, some people are purists and they think that only those that meet the blood quantum laws that the United States has come up with should be writing, you know, anything about the Indians and so on and so forth. And I certainly don't claim to speak for any particular group or the Indians as a whole. I can only speak for the vision that I had and the spirit entity that came and brought this material. So that's all I can claim I know.
But you may have indeed had a past life.
And that could have been
a very recent past life.
I have several memories like that.
Yeah, I would think so.
So I will share one very quick story with you.
Please do.
A friend of mine shared the book with a friend of his who happened to be a shaman on the reservation. And he said that many of the youths there get disillusioned and want to leave the reservation and go to the city. And then it gets worse and they come back to the reservation even more disillusioned. And they'll come to him and with just a simple question. What is it to be Indian? Tell me. I don't even know how to do this. You know, this is what they're saying to the shaman. And he said he used to spend a great deal of time with them in sessions and trying to explain this and tell them about the old ways. But now he says, I give them your book, Songs of the Shaman, and tell them, read this. This is what the old ways were.
And when I did the meditation tonight, I read from the book and I did a free form of poetry for the meditation. So people can sit tonight at the end of the program and listen to that and just drink that into your bodies and you'll get an idea of what this is about.
Beautiful.
So can you describe the words on the pages that have somehow changed, or did you write it down in one way and then it maybe somebody reads it differently? What do you mean by that?
An interesting experience that I've had with so many of the people who have been readers of the book, they will come back to me and they will say that, as suggested in the introduction, I say, you read the book many times, read it slowly at your own pace, take it easy, don't race through it, and it will tell you things. And they say the interesting part about it is when they go back through any given chapter for a second time, they describe to me it's almost as if the words on the page have changed, because when they go through it a second time, it's telling them something completely different.
And that's because they've opened and they can go deeper.
And they can go deeper.
That's processing.
It's seven level thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love your term earth-based ethics. And that seems to be the overall theme of the book. To me, it's natural law. But earth-based ethics is wonderful, and spiritual ethics is something else. And when you put the both of them together, you really have a beautiful combination. So we're going to be going to commercial. Did you want to say something more?
No, I'm good.
Okay, we're going to be going to commercial. And I'd like to talk more about earth-based ethics and some of the oil shale operations and the oil spill. We'll talk about that right after this break.
Wisdom Magazine is one of the East Coast's largest free publications, with more than 1,000 distributed bi-monthly in three regional areas, New England, New York City and New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Wisdom is dedicated to opening the people's hearts and minds to the philosophy, products, and services of the new millennium, bringing love, peace, and positive information into the community. Elizabeth writes the astrology column for Wisdom, as well as a weekly astrology update for the Wisdom Magazine website. Visit us at wisdom-magazine.com to view our web edition. Opening your spiritual chakras is the next stage of your physical body's shifting reality. Your body is now merging with your etheric or universal body and the new spiritual chakra centers. You will begin to experience a realm of many vibrant prismatic colors and dancing energy patterns will emerge. By opening your spiritual chakras and merging with your universal body, you will come together in marvelous ways, and new spiritual powers will begin to emerge into your body system. The chakras are your major energy centers, and they allow you to transform your physical body and integrate with its spiritual body to function properly in the new fifth dimension energies. To accomplish these complex intertwining procedures, the spiritual hierarchy intends to bring forth four additional chakras as soon as possible: the eighth, the eight and a half, the ninth, and the tenth. These four new chakra centers will permit you to manage the immensity of multidimensional information inherent to your new physical body. The physical body will be walking in sync with the universal body. In addition, the four spiritual chakras will transform the other seven, thereby allowing them to take on many new responsibilities. Elizabeth Joyce has created a new CD to help you open your spiritual chakras. This is very valuable and is one of the primary ways needed for you to begin the ascension process and work well in the fifth dimension energies that are now coming onto the planet. In addition to the four spiritual chakras and the seven regular physical chakras, there is an extra chakra, the foot chakra, or the zero chakra. This is your earth grounding center, and it is located at the balls of your feet. Above the crown chakra are four more numbers, 8, 10, 11, and 12. The main purpose of these extended chakras, which has always been a part of the energetic field, including our aura, is to enable the individual to tune into his or her inner God self, the divine will, and even the galactic community that surrounds and supports the earth in its evolution. This is a CD that you will want to have and work with on a daily basis between now and December 21st, 2012. It is available here at bbsradio.com under the Let's Find Out page, as well as Elizabeth Joyce's personal website, www.new-visions.com. Be sure to get the CD, Opening Your Spiritual Chakras, with music by Richard Schulman, so that you can advance yourself and find security in these new, wonderful fifth dimension energies. Again, that's www.new-visions.com or bbsradio.com under Let's Find Out. You're listening to Let's Find Out on bbsradio.com, Station 1. If internet radio has a name, it's BBS Radio, the number one live internet radio talk show on the planet. Let's Find Out and our honored guests come to us every other Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific. If you would like to call in and ask a question, please dial 888-627-6008 in the U.S. and Canada. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Now, if you're just tuning in and would like to hear this show in its entirety, a podcast will be available tomorrow, and you can download it at the archive link at bbsradio.com. Remember, if it's not mainstream, it's BBS Radio. So now, let's find out with our host, Elizabeth Joyce. This is Elizabeth Joyce of Let's Find Out. Tonight, the book we are reviewing is The Songs of the Shaman by author Robin Miller. In 2001, Robin Miller questioned his life's purpose and embarked on a Lakota-style vision quest to unveil a deeper perspective. After 4 days and nights of intense prayer and reflection, Miller connected with the spiritual realms and realized his ultimate role was to bring forth ancient spiritual insights into a desperate modern world. Miller attempted to write a book on Native American wisdom over the next 5 years. Finally detaching from ego-based influences, he traversed the realm of the spirits again on a second vision quest. What Miller discovered was that he was to be a channel through which this book was to eventually write itself. A higher understanding and greater knowledge was yearning to be written and heard, and he was to be the conduit. The product, Songs of the Shaman, Path of the Feather, is actually authored by a spiritual entity known as Red Moon Ombre. Partnering with Miller as the physical channel, Red Moon Ombre delivers messages with profound insights and potential impacts on today's modern culture and societies. Songs of the Shaman is intended to be read and reread in order to peel back the layers of truth and to ignite a powerful desire to heal the earth and humanity in general within you. Presented as 23 chapters with numerous short verses encompassing each, Miller and Red Moon's Ombre's book offers subtle yet potent reminders of how Native American cultures show respect to and reverence for the earth and how they commune with the natural and spiritual worlds. The following are selected excerpts from Songs of the Shaman. Peace can be found in the realms of truth, acceptance, and purity. And truth, acceptance, and purity are found in the silent places, in those quiet personal moments of every day. Wake up! The miracle of light is not something that comes to us exclusively on Sunday mornings in church. The legend of the seventh fire represents the now time of the children. The children bring the new songs, and theirs will also begin a new old way. The Songs of the Shaman is a powerful collection of verses for anyone who wonders why our human societies are self-destructing. The poetic form is perfect because there is no word-for-word translation from the world of our ancestors to the insane world of modern post-civilization. They are different worlds, indeed, just as different as the world of the young parents playing with their newborn child versus the world of corporate acquisitions and mergers. We humans cannot continue to live in a world increasingly driven by pseudo-human beings called corporations. They are not found in nature, but were created for limited joint ventures and have continued to grow and consume our humanity. The book, Songs of the Shaman, is not political, but it points in a direction of some of our problems and some of the thought forms that keep us from living and becoming more fully human. It is a good book, an important journey for one who wishes to look beyond the current society in which they live. So, go out and get Songs of the Shaman by Robin Miller and enjoy the words over and over again.
And this is Elizabeth Joyce, and we're back with Let's Find Out. You were just listening to the flute dance of the Nutcracker Suite. I'm talking to Robin, and Robin is my guest tonight. He is the author of the Song of the Shaman, and we're talking about the earth, and we're talking about what's going on in the world. And Robin also makes flutes, so I could not resist playing the Nutcracker because it's a beautiful flute song. And Robin, we were going to be talking about the oil shale operations in Canada and the oil spills in Alaska because we're following Loving Mother Earth and trying to get back to the naturalness. And I wanted to know what you had to say about these upsets.
Well, anyone who is curious about it, there's a lot of different internet sites where you can go and look these things up, particularly YouTube and like that, where you can find a number of videos, and they will show you in living color exactly what they're doing to the wild country up there. They're just literally wiping it off the map and turning it into a landlocked oil slick that covers thousands and thousands of acres. They're just destroying the natural forest up there. And then they have these nice commercials down here stateside that talk all about how, their search for the things that are locked in the oil shale and the gas and the oil that's locked in the shale, and it's perfectly safe, and it's laughable because it's just not true. Well, anybody who looks at those films and the pictures of what they're doing up in Canada can tell that what they're doing as far as it's concerned is not safe.
I want to tell you something.
Toxic chemicals everywhere.
I was on a ship in the Pacific Ocean the night that the Japanese earthquake happened, and I was two of the top scientists in the world, and there was 200 people in this group, and they took us into a room, and they showed us the Earth, the globe, and they showed us inside the globe was all of these oil, all how the oil goes, and it looked like our bloodstream. So they're saying that the oil is the blood of the earth, the flow of the earth. It's what keeps the earth consistent with the way that it is. And as we drill the oil, we cause cave-ins of the land. And they showed us that on one side of the world was Japan, and on the other side of the world was the Gulf of Mexico, and that they had pulled too much oil out of that and had gone below the allowed depths that Congress has set, and they pay a fine, but they could have been part of the cause of that earthquake. And I thought it was fascinating. As they should know it.
I suppose it certainly sounds logically, like that could be something that happens. But I'm very concerned about some of the things that they're doing. This whole idea of fracking is very scary too, where they're heating water and highly toxic chemicals and pumping it into the rock substructure underneath of us to break up the rock, supposedly to free gas and oil, which I suppose sounds like a good idea until you consider that our aquifers are down there, our fresh water supply, the Ogallala aquifer.
That's
8 or 9 states right in the midsection of the country. If those chemicals and toxins that they're pumping into those wells break into that aquifer, this is not going to be like covering that oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. Put a cap on it and it'll be fine. How do you cap on cracked rock?
As a matter of fact, it could even affect Yellowstone. There's so much going on with Yellowstone. That would cause a 400-mile crevice, and it would shut down this country if Yellowstone goes.
Well, Yellowstone is spoken about as one huge volcano, 100 times larger than any of the ones that you see out on the West Coast, like Mount St. Helens.
As they work on in these areas, it could be Alaska, it could be Canada. It could affect Yellowstone as well as the water, and that could really cause a problem. So we'll just have to see what happens, and everybody's got to be putting out those good thoughts. So you're talking about the difference between the Bill of Rights and the Bill of Responsibilities. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
You can't have responsibilities or can't have rights without having responsibilities that cover them.
Absolutely true.
And this is something that I do have listed on my website, the www.redmoonhombre.com website, which is actually for the book too. But one of the pages is about a Bill of Responsibilities, and there's several listed there, the whole idea behind which is to find ways to be responsible for your own actions. It's a strange world we have these days where no matter what happens to someone, they think someone else is at fault and they ought to sue them.
Oh, yes, that all started. That's man against man. That's in the Bible. And it's also something that my grandmother taught me when I was little, that father would turn on son and neighbor would turn on neighbor, and that it would really not be pretty until... We have to go through this, though, to get to the other side, and the other side is love, peace, and harmony, hopefully.
Exactly, and the whole theory there, in order to have not only the rights, but that love, peace, and harmony, is to step up and accept the responsibilities for your own actions.
It's hard to do that. It's hard to accept responsibility when people are blowing up rocks, and then there's a hurricane, or there's a cave in an earthquake, and then you lose your home, and then how do you be responsible for that? So there's a lot of interference. I understand that you have to absolutely accept responsibility for your actions, but sometimes there are things that are beyond our actions. There is a call-in for you, Robin. Her name is Claudia, and she would like to speak with you. So let's see what she wants to know. Good evening, Claudia.
Oh, hi. My name is Jane, actually. Jane Gaudio.
Next one.
I'm calling in because I'm in Robin's Circle on Thursday.
Oh,
and we experience the wonderful power of music together every week. And I was wondering, I'd like to ask Robin what his thoughts are about music changing the course of human activity. We're also devastated about how Mother Earth is being desecrated and destroyed. And we feel the power of music together every week. And I wonder what Robin's thoughts are about this, and if he has hope for the course of humanity altering its course. Anyway.
Oh, I absolutely do. One of the things that, as I have mentioned, I don't particularly think of myself as a shaman. This is for someone who maybe knows a good deal more about these things than I do, so you know, I don't usually get into that. But I am, and I don't talk about this much either, I am the bearer of the tribal healing flute. So I have done healings, and I know that the power of music is incredible when you get into that healing arena.
Absolutely.
You're able to help someone, you know, reach toward toward that feeling of health and well-being. And
well,
music can do that.
The math of God, and I've been playing William Vitalis, who is a deep healer. He's a fabulous healer, and he's the one that sang Water and our opening song. And when I did the meditation tonight, and I did the Indian chanting, I used Richard Shulman, and he was playing the Walk with the Animals. So there's wonderful music out there that you can use to help you ascend and go higher. It raises your vibration, and it clears you from your negativity, and it removes all of your blocks, all of your fear, and that is what you can do. Music is wonderful, and it's very necessary. I use something called Ardas, A-R-D-A-S, and it means prayer beyond prayer. And I use that in all of my healing circles, and everybody instantly gets energetic, feels a lot better. But I'd like to know, do you use flute music, Robin?
Yes.
Oh, that's got to be beautiful. How that works.
Well, let me say this, too. I think there's a huge gap between the Western style of music. I mean, we were playing the Nutcracker Suite earlier, and, you know, the musicians that play in that are just marvelous at what they do. They're so good. But you have to understand that in Western society, when you want to be a member of the orchestra or you want to be a member of the band, there's tryouts. Hundreds of people come and they want to play that flute or they want to play that violin, and they select the very best of the best. And this is the Western style of doing things. There's nothing wrong with that. That's good. And listen to the music we get. Tchaikovsky's, Nutcrackers, just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But in native style music, it's a little bit different. And this is a good point, because we were talking about, you know, the differences between the two different cultures. In native music, it's not about who is the very best. It's about who is willing to participate.
Correct.
So they are all good musicians. Because when they play that flute or they play that drum, if what they're doing is coming from their heart, it
then
can't
it's
be
magic.
Better than that. It
then
can't be more healing than that.
Absolutely. I'll never forget when my 15-year-old was having his 16th birthday, and he was a drummer, and we went to a nightclub, and they had a band. And I tipped the Mata D to have him go up and play the drums. I mean, he was dancing on air for 2 weeks that he was able to play those drums with that band. And they so honored him. And they let him play, and they made it sound really good. It was so neat. So
one of the things that we talk about so much in the flute circle, this isn't about who plays the best. We're a teaching flute circle, and the idea is to give everyone an opportunity to express what's in their heart, and that's what we try to teach. I don't teach people to read music. I don't care if you know how to read music. What we teach doesn't even involve something written on a page.
It's something inside. It's called your intuition and your feelings.
Exactly.
And it's putting your heart and your soul and your universal body into something of expression that brings beauty. And if it brings beauty to you, then that's all that matters. Because that beauty that's coming inside of you is going to shine out to everybody else.
Precisely. We talk about that. It's, we teach a very basic six-note scale, for the native flute. We teach embellishments, which is how you take those six notes and make them sound interesting. And then the third thing we teach, the most important part, is everybody is born with that song in their heart. And
yep.
We want to teach them how to find that song and how to express it.
You know where that shows up? With autism. I don't know if you know how musically inclined the autistic people are. Most of them can tune a piano at will, and they have a wonderful rhythm to them, as well as our Down syndrome children. They love music. Music makes them happy. Music makes them laugh. Music makes them feel good. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're getting ready to close, and I wanted to know what your closing words would be. Are there any other projects in the offering, and what are you doing with the book, or is there another one coming along? Is Spirit giving you something to take you to a deeper layer, lever?
I for a long time did nothing. I thought, well, the book is what the book is, but now it appears that the spirit world is wanting me to work a little bit further. So I'm three chapters in to a new book. It's basically going to be an extension of the existing Songs of the Shaman.
Good.
We don't have a working title for it yet, but I'm sure it's a year or two into the future before we'll have that done. As I say, I only have three chapters into it now.
That's wonderful.
But it's going to be very much like the book, The Songs of the Shaman, and travel along those same lines.
Well, let me have your website again.
It's www.redmoonhombre.com.
That's wonderful, and I'd love to have you back so that we can structure this show to take questions about shamanism, how somebody could develop it, or how somebody could learn about the flute music and improve their lives in many ways. And I think this was very significant, and I want to thank you, Robin, for coming on to Let's Find Out.
You're most welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
This is Elizabeth Joyce, and we're listening to Let's Find Out, and I'm be on again on December 17th, which is going to be a show kind of going towards the holidays, and I hope to have some wonderful music with Annabelle Wood, and I also may have a guest come on and talk about the psychic world or the medium world and what's coming in on 12/21. And again, we're going to be on New Year's Eve with Mark Dodich, and he's going to tell us everything that's coming with astrology in 2013. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure. Again, I'm back on December 17th. It's Elizabeth Joyce with Let's Find Out. Now it's time for the meditation. So relax, kick off your shoes, and lean back. Thank you and good night.
Sit with both feet flat on the floor. Lean back and relax. Take a deep breath. Release the breath. Sit with your spine straight, and we are going to begin the Sat Nam. You turn your head to the left for the word Sat. You come back to the center. Then you turn your head to the right for Nam. Sat Nam means with God. It's Sanskrit. We're going to do this exercise 16 times. Sat Nam. Sat Nam, 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 Sat Nam. Take a deep breath and hold. Release the breath. Now I want you to start breathing from your solar plexus. Breathe in and out very quickly. This is called the breath of fire, and we will do this for 30 seconds to 1 minute. It's good for you to get this exercise up to 3 minutes if possible, but that can take almost a year to do. So let's begin with the breath of fire. Keep it going. Almost there. Take a deep breath and hold. Now I want you to begin the ring of fire. Picture a huge fire ring around the top of your head. And we're going to bring it down over the body. Let's burn away your negativity. Bring down the ring of fire. Bring it down over the body, around the hips, down the legs, and throw it into the center of the earth. We'll do this two more times. Ring of fire around the top of the head, down the shoulders, around the body, down the legs, and throw it into the center of the earth. Ring of fire above the top of the head, down the shoulders, around the body, around the hips, down the legs, and throw it into the center of the earth. Now be still for a moment, closing your eyes. Do not open your eyes during a meditation, because that breaks the circuit, the electrical circuit that you're building. We're going to start working the chakras. So we're going to do swirling wheels of light. And we'll picture the color red. We'll have a swirling wheel of light, and it will come in to the third eye, and it will be placed down at the bottom of your spine. And it always swirls in a clockwise position. So bring in the root chakra, swirling whirl of red light. Place it at the base of your spine. The root chakra represents fidelity, loyalty, strength, and service. Now we'll picture an orange swirl of light. Bring that into the body and down and place it above the root chakra. This is your second chakra or your health chakra. Swirling orange light. And the words for the second chakra are receiving and creativity. Now we're going to picture a larger circle of green light. This is the solar plexus and it is the largest chakra on the body. Bring the green swirling wheel into your third eye and bring it down and place it behind your navel. This is your solar plexus chakra. And the words to put into your solar plexus chakra are gut feeling reaction, integrity, the will, and knowing what to do. The root chakra is the last yang chakra. Now we go to the heart center. So we'll bring in a yellow swirling wheel of light, always going in a clockwise position, and it's going to come in right at your heart. Bring in this beautiful yellow light. Yellow wheel of swirling light is your heart center. And this brings you joy, happiness, laughter, and good feelings. Also, forgiveness is at the heart center. So let that wheel turn for you along with the others in a perfectly balanced harmony. Now we'll begin with the yin chakras. Picture a swirling light blue wheel of light and bring that into the throat center, which is a little bit below the neck, just at your clavicle. So let's see this beautiful swirling blue light. And the words for the throat chakra are sincerity, clarity, abundance, affluence, as well as discernment. So let that come in. And then we'll start the dark blue indigo light for the third eye. And we'll swirl that wheel and we'll bring that right into the third eye. Feel that swirling around you. Feel your third eye perhaps throbbing a bit. The third eye represents your freedom. The third eye is where you watch your etheric body go out of you and go other places to do other things. This is where you witness the out-of-body experience as well as your past lives and your astral projection. The words for the third eye are freedom, knowledge, wisdom, and clarity. And that is the third eye. And now we'll go on to the crown center. Picture a beautiful violet silver light coming into your top of your head. This is the crown center, and the light is coming down from the divine. And this is opening up your thousand petal lotus blossom at the top of your head. And the words for the crown chakra are bliss, grace, immortality. And this is what joins you to your blessed higher self as well as your soul school. Open up the crown chakra and allow the chakti energies to come in through the body and go down through all the chakras down to your root chakra. Sit for a minute and let the chakra wheels spin. Now very carefully, I want you to go into the root chakra and push it up to the second chakra, up to the solar plexus, up to the heart center, up to the throat center, and push the chakras out through your third eye. Release the chakras back into the universe to do their recharging for you. And now let's bring down that thousand petal lotus blossom out through the third eye and release the chakra out into the universe so it can recharge for you when you're ready to work your chakras again. And now you can just sit and surround yourself with white light. Surround yourself with white light as much as you can. You're inside an egg. Picture that, and picture this wall coming around you that's very, very, very thick. Very thick white light wall. This is your wall of protection, and you will use it throughout the day to protect you, to guide you, as well as to keep any negativity off of your body. It will just bounce off of your auric shield. So sit and build your auric shield. And when you are finished, please thank Spirit by saying, God grant me health, protection, and guidance. Thank you, Spirit. And then it's always best to sit for a few minutes and let your mind and your feelings, as well as your blessed higher self, wander out there in the universe, just in case there's a message to be brought back to you. So sit for another few moments, and then do some deep breathing. Take a deep breath, take another deep breath, and allow yourself to come back into the room. You have just cleared yourself of negativity and worked your chakras.